Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just 15 bucks a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood. You know, the real conversations.
Tips and tricks.
Products we love.
And brands we can't live without.
Let's get into it.
Good morning.
Good morning. I am fresh from legs, bums and tums.
Are you? Oh gosh, I'm fresh from eating leftover kids' eggy bread.
Oh, that is delicious though.
Is that the
Something
same?
About the sort of coldness and sloppiness of it, which that, it tastes delicious about half an hour after it's made.
Yeah, and especially when it's like half chewed and like there's got a few, few fingerprints in it as well. But otherwise I wasn't going to eat.
I thought that I was like, oh, Monday morning, I was like, I feel a bit stiff because I got to train yesterday and I trained over the weekend. So I was feeling quite smug, but I was like, I'll just go for a little stretch. I was like, the old blue rinse brigade up there. I was like, they're not going to be like, they're not hardcore trainers. Those women, they train so hard.
Legs, bums and tums. I think is underestimated. I remember 100%. Doing that when I used to be a member at David Lloyd all those years ago when like I first met James, and legs, bums and tums is tricky. It's hard.
It's grapevine, and then you've got to like kick your bum with your. I was like all over the shop at the back of the class.
Yeah, yeah. those ladies in there, and it is normally ladies. There's not really any men in there.
There weren't any.
They are pros. They've been doing it for years. So you step in there, you can't keep up.
One of them was looking at me. I was trying to do. We'd moved onto the floor and we were doing abs and we were doing, you know, Russian twists. And yeah. I kept having to break. So I've got the worst, like my ab separation still quite bad. So in my head, I was thinking, you know, this is why I'm doing it. But this like, she was about 65, 70. She was proper giving me the evils every time I stopped. Like, come on, love, work a bit harder. I was like, fuck off. So anyway, how are you? How was your weekend?
I'm all right. I'm good. We had a busy weekend. I'm actually shattered because Gigi is literally driving me mental because she just keeps coming into our room. I don't know what to do. Is it safe to put a lock on her door and lock her in? No.
You could lock your own door.
That's a good idea. I had not thought of that. Yeah, because I sort of felt like if we lock her door, then maybe like social services will come and get us or something. But
yeah,
if I lock my own door,
That
is a good idea. I don't know what is going on. It's so annoying.
Could you put a mattress on the floor next to your side of the bed and then she could just come in and she could just get into that little mattress and sleep on the floor and then it really wouldn't disturb you?
Yeah, but it does because she keeps coughing. If she, before, pre-cough, fine. She used to come in, didn't even know she was there. I really didn't care. It's fine. Now she's like that. It's like she smokes 50 a day. It's like
Doc Cotton's come into the bedroom.
Oh God, here she is again. And then she like puts her face on my cheek and then just coughs in my face. I mean, honestly, I don't know what we're going to do, but we're going away like for 2 nights this week by ourselves. So I just keep, focus on that.
It's at this point that I want to play the sexy music. Bow chicka wow wow. Have you bought yourself some sexy new underwear?
What do you think?
Please don't take that awful cap thing that you were wearing on Instagram the other night.
I will be taking a cap. I will be sleeping in like button-up pajamas, cashmere socks. Basically, I won't have any skin on show. It will be
ankles. Can you just not release your inner sexiness for this trip? Because I feel like you could do like a dance coming out of the bathroom. You could wear some like agent provocateur, like crotchless panties with nipples on show.
Oh God. No? Do you know what? I actually have got a pair of agent provocateur crotchless pants, would you believe?
Fuck I actually off,
do
you
own
have
a pair.
Not.
I actually generally do own a pair. I'll post them on Instagram for you.
Please don't.
They're brand new. If anyone wants
genuine,
them.
Please do not post them on Instagram.
Obviously, I'm not going to post them on Instagram.
But you could be not wearing them and post the link for them because they, you know, I'm asking for a friend. Wink, wink.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to do that. No. I'm not. I'm sorry, Judgy James. If you're listening to this and you're thinking that Zoe's going to rub off on me, it's just not going to happen. We're fine.
Well, I did try, James. You sent me a message earlier on saying if you could try and
just drop in,
try and like get rid of the old sort of nun attitude that he's receiving every single night. No, genuinely, look, it's fine. You stick to what you're good at, and you know I'll stick to what I'm good at. Right, let's move on. Do you have a nice weekend?
I did, yeah. It was busy. I'm tired. That's all I've got to say about it, really. We just had lots on, and I think it's going to be like that until Christmas now. How about you?
Oh, I had a really lovely weekend. I was in nature virtually the entire time. We did like a monster walk on Saturday, and then on Sunday we went to Alice Holt. And there's lots of reasons why I'm annoyed that you don't live near me, but this is another reason, because you would absolutely love this place. It's an area of outstanding beauty. It's a spectacularly gorgeous, like kind of down near Chert, Thursley way. And it's just gorgeous. They have like these adventure playgrounds in the middle of the forest, so the kids can walk and like climb up logs. And then there's like an adventure playground, and it just sort of opens up, and then we move on to the next one. And it, you know, you're walking sort of 6,000-7,000 steps, and they don't even realize.
Wow. Is there a cafe? Yeah,
there is a cafe, and they serve wine.
Oh, okay, fine. Because, you know, you say, oh, we had a lovely weekend in nature. For me, like, as you know, that's not like nature. That doesn't make me feel calm. That makes me feel like...
Nature?
No. My natural habitat is like in the shops or a coffee shop. My natural habitat...
Well, I know, that's where we bloody
Is not with the trees. It's really not.
But you know that, Georgia, can I just explain something to you, right?
As long as there's a cafe at the end, it's cool.
Can I just explain something to you? That me, you and the tree, like you and a tree are basically the perfect combination, because what you breathe in, they expel. Like we work so in harmony together. We couldn't live without the trees. You better start hugging them quick, sharpish, right? Right. We've got to get on with the conversation today.
We have. Let's do it.
And Georgia and I, this was a very kind of, I guess, not a tricky conversation to have, but obviously quite a devastating conversation to have with the amazing person that came on the podcast today, because we are talking about grief. Our amazing guest very, very sadly lost her husband about 5 or 6 months ago, I think. Mm. And she's now navigating not only life without her partner, her life partner, who she loved and adored, but also now is raising 2 children by herself. And, you know, we don't shy away from these conversations here at Made by Mamas, but this one, I think, yeah, was a particularly kind of, we want a sensitive one. We wanted to get it right. We wanted to ask her all of those questions, you know, how is she coping, not only on her own, but how is she talking to her children about, you know, the loss of their father? And yeah, it was a beautiful, beautiful conversation on how to navigate grief.
It really was. And I think, like Zoe said, it's such an important thing to chat about, because until you're going through it, you don't know how that's going to be, what's going to come up. And also where to even start when those things happen in your life. No one is prepared for it. So we just really wanted to have this chat, and we are really thankful to our guests for coming on and being so open and honest.
We are. Who are we chatting to today, George?
Today we are chatting to Donna Jackson. You might know her as the Curious Mummy on Instagram.
So please welcome to the podcast, Donna Jackson.
Hello.
Yay.
It's so good to have you on.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I know it's a big subject. So thank you.
It's silly for us to say how are you, because I don't even think, you know, you would begin to be able to answer that question properly. But how are you this morning? How are you feeling today in this present moment?
No, I feel good today. So I try to wake up every morning trying to feel positive. I think that's all you can do. And then you hit the railroads of grief when they come. And when they come, I'm working with a counsellor, and he always says that you should try and sit with grief. It's almost like just to get used to it, because it's going to be there forever, but it's just finding a way. What I tend to do is put a mask on to the world and say, I'm fine, and it's all jazz hands. But actually, when I'm hit with grief, I just want to cry and be a complete mess. But I'm learning to kind of sit with it and let it in and go, okay, I feel quite sad. But then I change gear really quickly, a bit like what children do. I change gear really quickly by doing something positive. So then my associations with grief become less negative and more, more sort of comfortable.
Donna, if I could ask the question for those people listening who don't know your story, could you tell us, you know, what's been going on in your world over the last 6 months? You know, go into as much or little detail as possible. Just explain the backstory to this podcast today.
Yeah. So I was a family of four. There was me, my husband and two children. We lived a very normal life. And last Christmas, my husband developed COVID. And then off the back of COVID, he became quite unwell. And I would, it's safe to say that he never recovered from that. So 6 months leading up to his death, he just wasn't the same person. He was quite unwell. And I was on social media, but I withdrew quite a bit. So I've got a blog called The Curious Mummy. And essentially, it's kind of like a bit like what most mummy bloggers set up, just to kind of show the insights of real mum life. And that's what I started doing. But then I realised that I'm actually just very normal, like the rest of us all, and then started adding in some of my hobbies, which was the food. So, but the our lives became and are quite interesting to those that know us or those that follow us. My husband passed away in June of this year, and I completely pulled back from social media because I just didn't know where I was, who I was, what was going on, and I didn't know how to explain that to my audience. He passed away in June. We just went through a mad period of mourning and trying to work out who we were and, you know, what our lives looked like. And we said we would have the summer, which we did. We went off on holiday. We just tried to do normal things, and it was just me and the children. We did have friends and family come to stay, which was lovely, but we knew when we got to September, that was when we were going to start our kind of real lives without Daddy, because everyone had like left to go home that were staying with us. You know, the children didn't have their routine because they weren't in school. I didn't have my routine because I wasn't at work. Mm. We got to September, and then I was like, right, okay, we're going to start our normal lives. And then I felt like I'd been hit by a train. It was just incredible. I think the numbness had worn off, and I was doing the job of mum and dad. And then because it felt so emotional, it was emotional obviously at the start, but I was very numb and was just on autopilot. When I got to September, we started our normal life routine, and I did the job of mum and dad and found that incredibly hard.
Yeah.
And then I felt like this was a good time to talk about it on social media, just because it was so raw and I could talk about how I felt in the beginning or how me and the children were in the beginning to kind of where we are now. So I feel like my blog is starting to reflect where the journey has been, but obviously not from the very, very beginning.
Yeah. You mentioned that your husband had been, you know, poorly and not himself, but was it a shock when it happened? And I guess, like, did the children have any kind of inkling that something was going on or just not at all?
It was a complete shock. We had no idea that, you know, him being unwell would result in his death. I think quite a good point to make is that when I told the children that their daddy had passed away, the children at the time, I said, "Daddy's passed away, he's fallen asleep and he's gone to heaven," which I think is quite it was my sort of initial response. I didn't know what to say to them. And I thought that they would understand that. And Finley, so I've got two children. I've got Finley, who's 8, and Olivia, who is 6. So cognitively, their development is very different. So she's very young because she's under the age of 7. And then I think when they're 7 and over, they understand what death means. They understand what big topics mean. They don't understand the intricate detail like an adult, but they know what those words mean. Mm-hmm. Or at least this is what my counsellor has been telling me and a child psychologist that I've been working with. So when I told them, the children, Olivia was just, you know, she knew that Daddy had gone and it was hard for her. But Finley's automatic reaction was, "Daddy, I've got loads of questions for Daddy and only he can answer them." And then he was like, "I'm the only boy in the class that doesn't have a dad." He had a lot of Finley, I think, because he's very sensitive. And I think Gareth is, my husband Gareth was a very hands-on dad. You know, he was one of the coaches at my son's football team and we would help out at the school all the time. And he was very present in their lives. And I think, because he was so present and he was here with us all the time, it's made it even more harder, because the day-to-day life is so much more harder for them because daddy would do the breakfast. I'm sat in my kitchen, that's why I mentioned that. But, you know, there's lots of things that dad would do that mum necessarily wouldn't do because he was just around and there. And, you know, Olivia was very close to her dad, so they would talk a lot. And that's gone now. And yes, you can talk to me, mm-hmm. but it's different. And Finley, you know, I don't want to do the kind of gender things, but, you know, he enjoyed playing football and playing sports mm-hmm. with his dads, and that's what they did. And I mean, I'm not a great footballer, so I can try and help him with that, but I'm not going to, I don't understand the offside rule. So there's things that I'm never going to really get and be able to talk to him. But when, sorry, going back to your question, when we, they have found it, we've all obviously found it very difficult, but talking to them when it first initially happened, when he passed away, that is, I just said, you know, he'd fallen asleep. But then I spoke to a child psychologist and he was like, you have to be honest with the children. Yeah. And the reason for that is that when they get older, when they become teenagers, when they've got really big emotions, they'll start resenting you. And they, you know, they're not going to believe that he'd fallen asleep and not woken up. You know, they're going to really want to understand the reason behind, you yeah. know, his death. I just wasn't ready to sort of face it myself, but we did. But the way you do it with children is you layer that information. So I started off by saying, you know, daddy was unwell for 6 months. He wasn't himself. You know, he was quite poorly physically and mentally. The children understood that because they remembered him not being able to play sport or not being able to cycle as much. And, you know, I had to be really sort of visual with them because I think because they were so young, it was almost just reminding them that daddy was poorly. And then afterwards it was more kind of like the details of how he died, and I would layer that information and you know, as a parent, but also this is what the psychologist said, that you need to do it when they're ready. So when they're asking, you begin to layer. And that's okay. what I did. You know, it's been good because they haven't come back. They do come back and ask questions about his death, but we now don't talk about the death, not for any reason. It's just that they don't want to talk about it, and it's not a closed subject for them, but it's not something that they feel that they need to indulge in. They know the black and white of the situation, and then they're happy to, you know, move on to other subjects where they're missing their dad.
Does the person that you've been working with, is he preparing you for those moments where they might come back and ask more questions? Because I imagine it might oscillate day to day. You know, one minute they don't want to discuss it, and then maybe their curious minds are asking for more information in detail, and how you cope with those days when they come, I guess.
Yeah, so he was a friend of a friend, so that's who I spoke to initially, and now I'm working with another psychologist just because I want to get it right. And
yeah,
you know, I don't want them blaming their dad or blaming me for things in their lives. And, you know, we've read stuff in books and on Instagram about people who needed therapy a lot younger, and I just want to sort of help them as much as I possibly can so they have the fullest life possible. So I am working with a lady, and she always reminds me that grief isn't mental health. Grief is a natural response to somebody that you love that's died. She said that I can't prepare you, I can only guide you. And at this point in time, the children are receiving counselling from their school, which is normal, and they do have bereavement counselling sort of layered on top. And with children, so like adults, obviously we all need sort of variations of counselling, but with adults, grief, apparently it hits you around the 3 month mark, like real pain grief. And with children, that's 6 months. So, you know, I'm never sure whether they were ready or not, but my son, as I say, is quite sensitive, very emotional. You know, he wears his heart on his sleeve, and he you know, he's having bereavement counselling already. But I've seen a huge change in him off the back of that. You know, he's very positive, and like when Gareth passed away, he couldn't have any pictures up of him in the house. It would make him really distressed. It would make him feel that, you know, death was here and his dad was really gone. But now he can, you know, he's happy to see pictures of daddy, and he wants to do a memory box, which lots of people say is really good for children because it helps them put some of their emotions away somewhere that they can go back to and reflect on, but in a more sort of positive light. So we're just working on that.
We'll be right back after this short break.
Hold up.
What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Welcome back to this episode of Made by Mamas. Now, where were we?
I've just done some work with the guys at Grief Encounter. I don't know if you've spoken to any of them over there. They're absolutely amazing. I just hosted their gala for them last week. And one of the things I was having conversations with, you know, some of the other parents there and you know, some people that were actively involved in the charity. And they were saying to me, it's really important not to use words like lost or gone, that the children at that point might start asking questions like, well, when are they going to come back? And how can we find them? That actually, you know, saying the word death and died are really important. But I imagine for you, somebody that's holding so much pain around losing your partner, that even trying to mutter those words would have been virtually impossible for you.
Yeah, I mean in the beginning I had no idea, and I'll put my hands up, I didn't know anyone that was as close, that passed away. So I would say that I went into grief with no experience and really no expectations. And yeah, I did. I used all the wrong words. I used death, not death, but I used gone and lost. And Olivia, she would always talk about her dad in the present text, present context, which I'd always have to remind her that daddy, you know, he was no longer here, but, you know, he was here in her heart. And I would make reference to that as a kind of bridge to kind of go, okay, he has gone. You can still talk about him like that, but, you know, remember that he has gone. Like, for example, she said, one day I bought her a gingerbread man and she started eating it. Then she went, ugh, it's disgusting. And she left it on the side. And I said, oh, Olivia, could you just put that in the bin? And she went, no, daddy will eat it. And we sort of used Gareth as a bit of a dusty bin. We would always just like give him whatever. And then I had to remind her that, you know, daddy had passed away and that he wasn't coming back. And that was really hard because we were in a really normal situation. But I think she needed reminding that actually he wasn't coming back. Yeah. And yeah, those are the sort of daily things that I find quite difficult because that's when grief ambushes you.
Yeah. You mentioned that obviously it happened in June and you took the summer to do like normal things like going on holiday and spending time with family. But it wasn't until you got back to almost reality, I guess, in September when the children went back to school that it really hit you. How did like your children's classmates and teachers and, you know, parents at the school react? Because I think so often when something like that happens, people almost just close down and don't talk or turn their head away and they don't want to have those conversations. Mm. How did you find that? And also, how did the kids find it?
Yeah, so we've been so lucky. I think because Gareth was so a part of that community, the children go to this really small school. It's one form entry. So you know everybody from year six to reception. The amount of parents that came forward to offer support, I mean, and actually now that phrase, it takes a village, like I get that now, because without some of the parents, some of the children couldn't go to some of their classes after school, or, you know, they would, you know, it's play dates and things that you take for granted that you think you can do because your other half can help you out with. But actually now I have to rely on the community, if you like. But the school and the parents, I genuinely thought that they, you know, I thought because it's grief and because it's someone that we all knew and he was young, people wouldn't understand and not necessarily close the door, but they just wouldn't be, you know, wouldn't want to talk about it. But they talk about Gareth all the time. And he's really celebrated, and the teachers were amazing. And like, if the children find difficult, if, you know, if it's a difficult topic at school or something's, you know, really reminded them of their daddy, the teachers take the children off, and they've got lovely little gardens in each of the classrooms, and they get to go into like the reception garden because they've got lots of fun things there, and they can take a friend. And my children go to a Catholic school, so there is an obligation to go to Mass, I think, every couple of weeks or whatever it is. And the headmistress was like, I think with the hymns, the fact that it's really quiet in church, I think it's a, you know, it's not going to be the best environment for the children. So during that summer term, they didn't go to Mass, which, you know, hopefully the headmistress is not listening, but they were delighted, and they could bring their friends. And it was great. It was great fun for them. So, you know, it's been really nice that everyone's pulled together. Everyone's really supported us. And with the children, we have like an inner circle, and it's people that, you know, were there at the time when Gareth passed away. And the children talk to those people about, you know, if they've got feelings that they don't want to talk to me about, they'll talk to, you know, my mum or my best friend or, you know, an uncle or whatever. So they've got those people. So we call them the inner circle. And then there's the kind of middle circle, who are people that know, who knew Gareth and knew that he passed away when he did. Those people, again, will talk and support the children. And then there's the outer circle, people that just know us on the street. So, the children, I feel that they're really well supported. And I think without that, I think it would be a very different picture for us all.
How lovely. I love the way you frame that as well, so that they can really understand it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not, it doesn't seem like a complex, you know, diagram to look at, you know, the inner circle, the middle circle, the outer circle. It seems quite, it seems like something you could get your head around as a child. And then they seem that's really lucky, I guess. They've got so many amazing people to lean on. Like you said, it takes a village, doesn't it? Everyone just pulls together. Let's talk about, if we can, let's talk about your grief, Donna, and how you've navigated finding, you know, any form of like peace during these last sort of 6 months, because Georgia and I have conversations all the time about crying in front of the kids. You know, is crying in front of the children the right thing to do? And we haven't lost a partner. So, you know, what have you decided, and how much do you share with them and show them?
I think I sort of wear my heart on my sleeve like my son, but I think as time has gone on, I found it hard to cry in front of them. Because there's only me now, I feel like I've got to be so strong for them. And that's like it's a really stupid thought to have. But I know that it's really healthy for them to see me cry. And also then it allows them to express emotions when they're kind of unsure. So I do try and cry in front of them. But I'll be honest, I'll talk to them about how I feel. I feel like I'll say, oh, Daddy, I feel sad about Daddy today. Or, you know, I'll bring it up. But I do find it difficult to get really emotional in front of them. But I have been emotional. Like, we went away for the weekend and I came back and I just didn't want to be back in the house, and the children didn't want to be back in the house. We tried to extend our stay and we couldn't, and we were like, oh, really sad. We got home and I just broke down in tears, and there was no reason for it. I mean, the house has got nothing to do with, you know, Gareth passing away, but I think it just holds so many lovely memories. And because we can't make those memories anymore, we can, but not with him, it feels really hard and heavy. And coming back to, you know, our lovely home feels just, I don't know, I sometimes feel like we shouldn't really be here and we should be somewhere else making new memories. So I have cried in front of them at that point. I talk about everything to them. I'm quite honest and open with them. And I think that opens the door for them to be open and honest with me.
For you personally, you know, you just mentioned being in the house is really hard. I guess when you're sort of sitting by yourself thinking and, you know, trying to navigate the situation that you're in, do you find yourself almost wanting to just, like you said, just go away and start a new life? And, you know, what have people around you maybe said, like the counsellor or anything about doing that? Is that the right thing to do? Is that the wrong thing to do?
So everybody has said, wait at least a year. Don't do anything. After Gareth passed away, my initial reaction was to declutter the house, repaint the walls, just change it. And then lots of people going, hold back, hold back, hold back. So I have held back. I mean, the decluttering has been quite cathartic, so that's been lovely. But I haven't changed anything in the house simply because, you know, I might regret that. And that's the big thing, is like the regret, you know, jumping into something when actually everything's a bit cloudy at the moment, isn't the right thing to do. Although, you know, I'm dying to get things done in the house, but I need to just kind of hold off, because I think too much change could overwhelm me. And I can say that by sort of stepping back out of it. But, you know, where I have to, after Gareth passed away, I kind of steamed forward and tried to think about the future a lot. And I think what that did was just make me defer grief. And it got to that 4 month mark or 3.5 month mark. And then I was like really ambushed with it. And I felt like I couldn't cope. Like I could cope. I could be robotic and get on with the day to day. But emotionally, I was kind of breaking down. So I know that, you know, painting a wall or whatever, even though it would be fun, I'm just not going to do that. I'm going to just sort of see, because I'm apparently very early in the kind of grief cycle. I mean, I've had the numbness bit. I'm in the kind of realization now. And it could be after Christmas, there might be something new that comes up, but yeah, holding back. I mean, I'd love to move house, but I just think I've got to just be, well, actually I can't now because the mortgage rates are ridiculous.
Who can? Exactly. Who can move house at the moment?
I'm here forever.
Can we talk about the kids and things that have come up for them since losing their dad? Biggest kind of struggles for them, things that you've thought they might find harder, but actually it's been okay. You know, how have they changed as people, I guess, for anybody listening that needs a bit of help in that arena?
Okay, so the big thing for my son Finley is that there is no male figure in the house, and that's been a really big thing, and he feels that quite a lot. So I try to surround him with, you know, kind of men from his inner circle. So it's, you know, kind of some of the dads that he knows that are very similar to Gareth and who used to kind of hang out with Gareth, and they do love to do lots of lovely things with him. So that has been brilliant for Finley because it's almost given him a newfound level of confidence. Because he's learning different things, and yeah, and he can talk to other people now rather than just me about, you know, his feelings, and that's really nice, you know, other men. And then Olivia, she's just like Princess Poppy from the Trolls. She's just so positive, and she's grown up quite a bit, I would say, in the last few months. She's less young any longer, and she's a bit more grown up. And actually, another big thing is, I've noticed that my eldest has tried to move into the adult space. So he's tried to be dad. Yeah. And I have to always remind him that, you know, mummy is here and I'm the grown up and you can still be a kid. And and they both try and do it. And I remind them constantly now, but they never did that before. So it is reassuring them that they can still be kids. They don't have to clean up their mess. You know, they can't write on the walls, but they can write on the walls. You know, they can do things that children would do.
What are your worries for them? What are the things that you're worried about in the road that you've got ahead of you?
When they're teenagers, I think for me, that is where I'm really frightened about what their lives might look like. I worry that, you know, they might feel that because dad's not around, because their family nucleus is very different now from their friends, that they might do something quite destructive. But then in the other breath, I have to kind of give them a bit of confidence and go, actually, they're really good kids. And we're always talking. And like my dad always said it, you know, even before I had kids, like, actually, the only thing children need is love. So you just have to make them aware that you love them. And we talk about lots of subjects. But, you know, we're together as a really strong little force, with, you know, the three of us. So, yeah, my worry is their teenage years, but I hope that it would be quite a normal teenage years for them, because they are with good people and good friends, and we've got a lovely circle of people around us. So let's hope, fingers crossed. But my worries are probably the same as yours when your children, you know, get to that.
Yeah. We're hoping and praying that they don't turn into the Georgia and I during our teenage years, if we can just steer them away from all that.
That's the main goal.
As a sort of parting message to anybody listening that, you know, is very sadly going through something similar to you, what would you say?
I would say, if you can, take some time out for you. It's not selfish, it's survival. So even if it's 10 minutes to go and have a cry or take that bath that you kind of promised yourself, you know, just, or light a candle, whatever it is, or have a piece of chocolate, like, don't deprive yourself. It's a time where you actually just need to be kind to yourself. So I would say, take some time out for you.
Lovely.
Okay, Donna. Thank you, Donna.
Thank
you so much for coming on. We can't even begin to imagine what you've been going through the last 6 months. If we could our arms around you now and give you the biggest hug, we would, but we're sending it virtually to you. And thank you so much for being on the podcast, speaking so honestly. I know it's not easy to do, but I'm sure you've helped a lot of people today, and we are sending you lots of love.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
Oh wow, what an amazing woman.
I know, and it's it's really tricky, isn't it, when you're talking to somebody who is, you know, living through something right now. Mm. And I guess she seems like she's holding it together really well. Mm. I mean, you just can't begin to imagine all of the mixed emotions that you're feeling.
Yeah.
But also, I really hope that she is really taking care of herself as well. You know, as mothers and parents, we so often like don't look after ourselves. So in a situation like that, I can imagine it's actually even harder.
I don't even think, how do you even start? You know, your husband has died. You've then got to raise your kids by yourself. So not only are you solo parenting, you're then dealing with these mountains of grief that Donna is going through on a daily, you know, day-to-day basis, but having to be really strong for the children, still get up in the morning. Mm. I mean, it's a reality that you can't even start to imagine. And like you said, I really hope that she sounds like she's got a really lovely network of people and friends and family around her. But it was definitely, like I said at the beginning, it was a sensitive subject. Of course it is. But, you know, grief has to be spoken about. You can't hide away from it. You can't shy away from it. I mean, I remember, you know, losing my dad. But when he died, there was this feeling of like, I couldn't share my grief with anybody, you know, because when someone dies, you know, historically, I think we're sort of taught, let's not mention it. Let's not bring it up. Like you said, George, in the chat, going to the school gates, you know, do people want to hear about your dead husband or your dead father? Like, do people want to hear about it?
But yeah, actually,
you
weird.
Need to talk about it. You have to talk about it.
And the reason I brought that up is because a friend of mine lost her husband not very long ago. And I saw her recently at an event. And she said, oh, thank you so much for inviting me. And I was like, what do you mean? Of course I'd invite you. And she said, no. She said, people don't want to talk to me anymore. They don't want to talk to me. They don't,
so
you know, if I'm, you know, at a party or if I'm at, you know, a coffee morning or whatever I'm at, she said, whereas before everyone wanted to talk to me and, wanted to chat and like all of that, you know, a little bit of small talk. She said, now people really, she notices that people just don't look and just shy away. And I think her saying that to me, it's really made me more aware now that maybe I've been guilty of it, I don't know, but I know now that I definitely won't do that. And she said it's so much better to say something to that person and get it wrong rather than just ignore them and make them feel like they're not even there.
God, George, that's such a good point. And and my mum said the same thing, that she was like, you know, no one was inviting her for dinners, no one wanted to go and grab a coffee with her. She says she just felt, not only does she feel the loneliest and the most alone she's ever felt in her life, but then people just didn't know what to say. So I think maybe if you can take anything from this podcast, we're not going through what Donna's going through, but do not shy away from those conversations. Grief is one of those things. It doesn't just happen to you. It is a part of you.
It's everything.
It's everything. And it could come up at any moment. So yeah, just I guess hang on to the knowledge that people do want to discuss things. And actually, they'll probably tell you if they don't.
Yeah, exactly. And absolutely. And I think that's absolutely fine as well. You know, if someone approaches you and wants to talk about it, you can just be like, you know what? I'm really not ready to talk about it, but I really appreciate you reaching out. Thank you.
Gosh, thank you to Donna. And George, as always, I love having these conversations with you because they just mean so much. I feel like I always leave these podcasts having learnt so many things.
Me too. And I always leave with a fresh perspective on the day.
I do. And thank you so much for listening to today's episode. As always, we would love you to rate, review, subscribe and give the podcast a little follow if you can.
Yeah. And if there are any topics you'd like us to cover, guests you'd like to hear from, then please do drop us a message on Instagram. We are at Made by Mamas and we'll be back on Friday. Made by Mamas is an Insanity podcast production, and today's episode was produced by the lovely Charlotte Mason.
Insanity Group.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ,
the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.